Great to have Jimmy with us on the Monday Footy Review. Michael Falgate not too far away on Racing Pulse, and Gareth Hall just around the corner on RSN Central. A bit of a change of pace from a Monday morning, Jim. We've been able to find access to Magic Door, the Melbourne AFL footballer these days, not North Melbourne. Melbourne AFL footballer has had a dramatic couple of years. It's quite a remarkable story from AFL stardom to attempt to take his own life. He tells it all in a new book out. It's called Magic, available from bookstores, online, and as an audio book from the 3rd of August. You can get your copy for about $34.99. And it's been great to get a hold of Magic this morning. Madge, good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you going?
Mate, we are going well. How's your footy going at the moment? It's a tough team to get into, that Demons team, just firstly.
Yeah, no, the boys have been playing really well. I've been playing in the ruck all year now, so it's changed a bit from down back. So yeah, I'm an undersized ruckman, trying to crack in the side. So, but no, yeah, the boys are flying. They had a good win yesterday, which is exciting. So yeah.
Well, you've shown a fair bit of ability to come back from adversity in the last couple of years, Madge. I'm just with the book coming out. You've done so well to get back to where you are and have a great outlook on life and real positivity towards it now. When you were doing the book, how much negative emotion came up? Was it difficult to go back and see where you were at the time?
Yeah, look, yeah, it wasn't easy. There were some really uncomfortable parts of the book that I shared. But I guess the best thing about writing that book, I was really comfortable with Heath O'Loughlin, someone that I've known for a long time, pretty much since I got drafted to the footy club. So he's been there through the ups and downs. So, and he was very respectful, and you know, throughout the journey of writing the book, he made sure he made me comfortable and made it in a way that I could share my story really well. So, yeah, it was hard at times, but there were times when it was really just therapeutic to be able to share those experiences and put my mind at ease.
Madge, Jimmy Bartel here, mate. Well done on everything you're doing. You mentioned therapeutic. Was it the fact when you're sort of talking it out with Heath and, you know, you're putting it down on paper, did it feel like there was another weight lifted off your shoulders by just sharing your experiences, not only with Heath, but now you're sharing them with all of us?
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Like, it's just that, I guess, it was part of that book and part of my story and, you know, the hardship that I went through growing up. A lot of people didn't really know, and I wasn't quite sure how people were going to take it, but once I started putting everything out there in the book and I read it again, mate, I just felt kind of free in a way that, well, now everyone's going to know what I've been through, and I don't have to keep explaining myself to people. They can just read in the book, and I guess, yeah, owning my own truth in a way, feel a bit free. So yeah.
And the timing of it, I know that your little boy Hendrix has really helped you considerably. Is that helped you get to this point where you feel comfortable to share it?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I mean, back then I wasn't a father with all that stuff that I went through. But you know, since becoming a dad, I think a fair bit about him and what it would be like if he went through a similar sort of thing that I did. And, yeah, like, I mean, it's part of it. I really want to help people, but most importantly, when he grows up, I don't want him to go through anything like I did. And if he ever did, that he'd come to me for help or, you know, for advice, and I'd be there to help him. So,
Madge, you've clearly gone through a really incredible upbringing. Your story just even to get to Australia is quite extraordinary. Looking back on it now, where did it start to go wrong for you mentally? Are you able to sort of pinpoint now to the pressure that started to build up to get to the point where you got to?
Now, it's really hard to just put it to one thing, but I think along the way, you know, court case, you know, incidences of racism, tough times with my relationship, just accumulation of things like that, and I guess really not being able to figure out what was going on and what mental health meant at the time. And yeah, I think I just wasn't educated enough around the area. So when it all happened, it blew up in a big way. So I guess if I had my time again, I'd probably I'd probably pick up the red flags and talk to people around me, and then I'd get the proper help that I needed.
Because it was enormous pressure on you when you first burst onto the scene, because you were the poster boy for young Sudanese men, young African men. Some of the things that you could do on the football field were quite extraordinary. Did you feel that pressure of expectation of who you were representing and what it could potentially become, not just for you but for others?
Yeah, I did sometimes. I'm a very proud South Sudanese man, and I guess I'm a proud Australian as well. But yeah, just to be given that title, I didn't have a choice in the matter, and I was getting pulled left, right, and centre to go be a spokesperson, for my community. I was a rookie for a long time. I don't have the CV like some of my teammates that have been around for a long time. So that I felt like I wasn't on the footy field. I wasn't really living up to my name, but I just had this big profile with that didn't have a lot of things to match with it. So and I just didn't know how to say no to people. People wanted my time. And that's probably. But now, a bit older, pick and choose what I want to do. I can say no to people, but that took a lot of help from working with the professionals. That it's okay, you can let people down, and you can feel uncomfortable about it. But just preserve my time a bit more and just being careful of how I want to be perceived. So yeah,
Madge, we half touched on a lot of the adversity that you've been through, but also football's been a consistent thing going on in the background. Is it different times football was a burden, or has it always been like a safe zone for you, a positive outlet, or a place for you to get through those tough times?
Yeah, I mean, look, People have asked me if I ever thought about when I was going through my battles, if I ever wanted to take time away from footy. But footy is one of those things that I've just loved since I started. So I think there was nothing better for me than to just go out in the footy field and play for a couple of hours and put my mind at ease and forget about my problems and just being at the footy club around my teammates training. I really enjoy that part of my life and still do to this day.
Mad Jack Dawes joined us. A new book out, Mad Jack, in bookstores 3rd of August. You can get your copies anywhere that they sell all the good books. But Mad, I'm absolutely fascinated in your whole story, most of it, from start to finish. The first moment we laid eyes on you and your background, as Whitey mentioned, your ability to hit the heights you did in the AFL world, and then what happened to you with your mental health to the point where you're in utter despair and you thought there was no other way but to end your life. I'm fascinated how you come back from that point. What sort of work have you done, or what have you had to change in your life to be so positive now, to have so much to look forward to? What's different?
I guess finding out that I was going to be a dad was a big factor. I wanted to make sure by the time Hendrix was born that I had my my life together, and I knew it, if I didn't really just be honest with myself and put my ego aside and just go to work with my psychologist and my psychiatrist. And one of those big things where just exercising on a daily basis, three times a day. This is when I was in the hospital. The trade-off was that I could that if I kept up my rehab in the morning, mid-morning, and then late afternoon, that I wouldn't take medication, and that was something I was really against, and that really helped me a fair bit. Just keep me busy. Come back, and I was really tired, so I'd go straight to sleep. So I barely had any spare time to think about much. But I guess just being grateful for the little things in my life, my friends, my family, and even on reflection from where I've come from, the opportunity to, have food on the table, a roof over my head, and even to the point where, the hospital staff at Epworth and the surgeon that did my surgery. Man, I think if I was back in Sudan, I'd either be in a wheelchair or would never be able to walk again. So just being grateful for those things and, looking forward to the future. I think that was a big driving factor to the professional, to the psych and stuff. If they can identify that, they can identify someone with mental health is optimistic and is looking forward to things ahead. It means they're healing. So, it was just a big learning experience for me.
I was going to ask you that when you woke up and you were told of the injuries that you sustained in the fall. Did you and what you'd been through mentally where obviously you were mentally to get to that point? Did you think you could come back? Did you think that everything was all going to be too hard and you weren't going to be able to get back to what you would love to have been? Or did you always think once you'd gotten through it and worked out that you were still here living and had so much to look forward to that it was going to be capable, or you were going to be capable of getting back on track?
Yeah, look, I'm really optimistic. I'm an optimistic person by nature. I think once I found out what happened and just looking around the room and people everywhere, I couldn't hide. There wasn't much I could do at the time. But three days later, I just walking around with a walker frame on crutches and being in a wheelchair for a period of time. And I guess being surrounded by elderly people who've had hip and knee surgery, I just said to myself, I don't belong here. I'm just gonna give it a real hot crack. And funny enough, my physio from the footy club would come in and visit me, and he'd see where I was and get an update on my injuries. And I told him, mate, I'm gonna come back and play this year. Anyone, dampen my spirit, but I just put my mind to it, and I said, look, yep, it's going to be hard, and the physical pain from the injuries I sustained, I'm just going to put my mind to it, and I'm going to come back and play. So I was just really determined.
Madge, this is a really uncomfortable question to ask, but the confronting nature of wanting to end your life and having that thought process going through your mind, I think is confronting for everybody. When you look back on it now, can you even imagine to think that you had that thought, you had that want?
Yeah, like it's a pretty hard thought that that's what I did to myself, and I think I was just a bit. I had a big, I just couldn't put my ego aside and just tell people that, I was struggling. I think even to utter the words of being depressed and telling the people around me that's where I was. I that person is no longer around. You know, I think me, Rama's there. We chat a fair bit, and he's been an incredible support to me, my family, the club doctor, Peter McQuay. Mate, so if, at any time I if things are tough, I'm not too scared to ask for help, because I know where I've been, and I'm terrified of that person back in 2018, and I'm no longer that person. I know what to do. I'm far more educated around mental health, and I'm not too scared to talk about mental health, because I've seen what it does, what it's done to me, and I know what it can do to other people. And I think it's important that we start having these conversations to make people feel comfortable, so they can go and get the help that they need. Yeah,
because it was almost like you've got a second chance on life because you survived what happened.
Yeah.
When you woke up and realised what had happened, were you happy to be alive, and were you happy to get the second chance, or were you initially, you know, that you didn't want to have that second chance?
I regretted what happened. I mentioned that in the book, in the incident. You know, I regret what happened straight away. But I think, you know, the next few days when I was laying in hospital, and I was quite embarrassed in a way that, you know, that I couldn't hide. There was no privacy. Everything was so public. It was everywhere. And to be quite honest, I was sleeping a fair bit because I was in so much pain. When I started to make sense what had happened, and just seeing my little brother, and just how much it hurt him, and what had happened to me, I just said, look, there's nothing you can do now. What had happened, it had happened. People had their different opinions about my situation, but I just had to be really strong and just try to be positive about things, because I am alive and I'm around. So I think that's the number one thing I was grateful for. So.
Well, I'm sure everyone in your world was grateful for that, and all of the footy fans were grateful for it as well. And that photo, I don't think there'll be many people forget that photo at Metricon Stadium when you kicked the goal against the Adelaide Crows in that first comeback game, and the way the boys got around you. It'll be a vivid memory, I'm sure, for most footy fans for the rest of their lives. What was that moment like for you, Madge, as a comeback triumph?
Yeah, it was amazing. Okay, when I came back through the VFL and played at Arden Street, and so many people came, it made me realise what it meant to a lot of people. You know, not that I craved the attention or go looking for it, but just the support that I've received along the way, I was really surprised how long it would actually take to come back and play. It took a long time. The rehab, but then COVID hit. You know, who would have thought that I'd come back and make my comeback game away from my family up at the Gold Coast? But I was just so excited, and I remember, you know, when I kicked that goal in the last quarter, I was really searching to kick a goal. I was looking to kick a goal all day, and then when it finally came, I kicked it, and you know, I'll never forget that moment. You know, the kick the ball, and I never looked back to see if it went in. I was just so confident that it was going to go in, and to have the boys there, you know, they've been with me through thick and thin. It was a really nice moment just to celebrate it with your teammates, and yeah.
Well, it was a smile for the ages that won't be forgotten anytime soon in my world anyway. It was great to see it, and it's great to see you still out there doing your thing with the D's. But more importantly, you're getting your life on track with your family, and we're more aware of your situation. You're able to move forward really strongly, Madge. Courageous to tell the story. It is in the new book, Magic. with Heath O'Loughlin. You can bookstores on the 3rd of August, about $34.99, online, wherever you can find all the good books. There's a long backstory to get to that point, and hopefully a great story to tell in the future. Madge, we appreciate your time and your honesty with us this morning. Thank you, buddy.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys.